As a result of the success of Survivor when it first aired in 2000, the reality television genre has been booming. As ratings and profits continue to grow, many overseas companies are buying their way into the New York market. But The Real Reality, a report that was commissioned by the Civil Service and Labor Committee of the New York City Council, paints a bleak picture of the working conditions of the reality television industry. Long hours, no overtime, no health or pension benefits, and no basic protections are just some of the problems. Joining me to talk about the report are Lowell Peterson, the Executive Director of the Writers Guild of America, and reality television director, writer, and producer David Von Taylor. I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show today. Hello.
Good morning. Good afternoon, rather.
Nice Lowell, isn't reality TV called many different things within the industry? Nonfiction TV, unscripted drama, reality programming?
Yeah, there. It has many names.
Are they all really the same thing?
They are. It's nonfiction is the phrase we use. Most people think of it as reality TV. It is actually scripted. It is actually written. That's the sort of dark secret of reality TV. The story beats are all written out. The narrative arcs are written out. So it's all written, but it's not dramatic fictional TV.
And we could have guessed that, couldn't we, David? Because there's always a writer's credit.
Actually, there's never a writer's credit, but that's not because there aren't writers. That's because these companies don't want to give writers credits because they're afraid of the Writers Guild coming in and organizing their workers.
How did the working conditions of the reality television industry first come to your attention, Lowell?
Well, you know, we represent a lot of people who write news and public TV and documentaries, and so we were sort of in the space. About 4 years ago, the men and women who write these shows came to us and said, look, we look at what Writers Guild members get. They have pension and health benefits. They have minimum compensation. They have a voice on the job with the union. What can we do to work together? So we've been working with them for about 4 years.
Are the conditions the same whether the show is broadcast on one of the traditional networks or if it's a cable show?
Yeah, the conditions are pretty bad across the board.
David, how long have you worked in the television industry?
I've been doing this for over 25 years. For a lot of that time, I was called a documentary filmmaker, and now I'm called a nonfiction producer. But the job is all the same.
But you slipped in from documentary filmmaker to reality television producer because you say you're doing pretty much the same thing?
Well,
you're working under somebody else's concept when you do a reality TV show.
That's true. I mean, it's a slippery slope. I mean, the reason that I moved was because the traditional sources of funding that I, for several decades, garnered to make documentaries, foundation funding, broadcasters, overseas broadcasters, those were shifting, drying up, decreasing. My family had some health problems, and I went and I got a job working at one of these companies, and now I'm, for the last 2.5 years, been a freelancer working at various reality nonfiction companies.
In the golden age of television, the networks did documentaries. Then it pretty much came down to public television, and now HBO and public television, and that's it?
Yes. Yes, and everybody else has gotten into the game of reality or nonfiction. NBC is doing it. Discovery is doing it. All of the networks, whether they're cable or broadcast, have gotten into this.
But under the rules that don't apply to other NBC shows or CBS shows.
Exactly. The people who work on NBC's fictional scripted shows, comedies, whatever, have Writers Guild protections. We who work in nonfiction don't have those protections.
Well, how big is the reality television industry here in New York?
Well, we estimate 15,000 plus total employees in New York. I mean, and it's growing. It's
representing how many shows?
Oh, my God, hundreds. Each production company will do between 3 and 6 and 8 shows in any given season, and there are dozens of them.
And then there's post-production work done here as well?
Yeah. In fact, typically in nonfiction, the same company will do it from concept through post-production.
The report describes a tale of two television industries. We've kind of hinted at that. Big differences between a show, a sitcom or a drama show, and these. Is one of the big differences the cost? Is that one of the reasons we're seeing so many reality television shows?
Yeah, I think that's right. It started as extraordinarily low cost, low budget, low viewership television. I mean, this was when basic cable started, no one really took it seriously. Nobody in the legitimate big television industry thought that basic cable would ever amount to anything. In fact, it's become huge. The audiences are enormous. The advertising revenues are huge. It has really entered the big leagues in every way except employee compensation.
And the networks really have taken advantage of this moment, which has gone on for more than a decade, where they can produce reality shows that are getting the same ratings, selling the same amount of advertising at the same rates, getting those revenues while paying much less to make the programs because they're under the rubric of nonfiction or reality.
And then they're not paying the actors either.
Right.
And often a major part of the cost of a sitcom, for example, is that the star wants a lot of money per show. Here, you pretty much have people performing for nothing or virtually nothing?
Though one of the dirty little secrets of the industry is that some of these people who become stars, nonfiction stars, are in fact getting compensated pretty well.
Yeah, and they make a lot of money on their endorsements. And it's an alternative way of life. It's just it's not a very stable way of life.
But they're housewives, aren't they, living in New Jersey?
They're real housewives, no less.
My guests are Lowell Peterson, Executive Director of the Writers Guild of America East.
Yes.
And also David Von Taylor, who is a reality television director, writer, and producer. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The reality television industry continues to grow. How much revenue does the industry make?
I would say on an annual basis, it's hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars just in New York and billions if you look at the entire national scope. I mean,
I read that in 2012 it was $52.3 billion, up 5.3% from 2011.
Yeah.
And one of the other indicators of how well this industry is doing is that there's been a spate of mergers and conglomerations, and recently the company that that produces Pawn Stars, which is one of the biggest success stories, was 80% of it was bought for $350 million. A lot of people are making bets on this continuing to be a growth industry. The other thing to note is that I learned from the white paper that the union put together was that the profit margins in nonfiction television, reality television, are huge. I mean, we're talking 40% on 40+% on average, and for some of the highest networks like Discovery, a profit margin of above 60%. I mean, that's a lot of profit.
This is one of the things that galls us most. It's not as if this is a mom and pop operation. This is the big time.
But they're operating as though they're mom-and-pop operations?
They are. This is like the old days of union organizing. We are at the ground floor the way that the labor movement was in the 30s.
I'm assuming because we are in New York and our listeners are often in the entertainment business that we have some listeners who have stories that they could share, people who have been working in the reality television business. And if you would like to tell us about your experience, you can call us at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. David, you've worked across both industries, reality and scripted. How do you compare the different work conditions?
Well, I haven't actually worked in fiction television.
Yeah, you did documentaries, you said.
Exactly.
Okay, but when you were working on a documentary, was that union?
Sometimes yes, but usually no. But that really was a mom-and-pop operation, and it was a situation where you were directly in connection with your employees. What happens in these companies, which often grow out of small operations but become much larger, is that there becomes a disconnect between the people who make the big decisions for how working conditions are going to be and the people who have to live with those conditions. And I think often they don't really think about what the consequences are for somebody who has to work a 20-hour day or somebody who has to work a 100-hour week.
20-hour day? I know one of the people in the report said he worked 111 hours in 1 week. Yeah. What is that? 16 hours a day, 7 days.
That's the only way they can make it work with the production schedules that are often set by the networks. It's not only the production companies that are squeezing conditions. It's also the networks, because they're only willing to pay a certain amount of money to the production companies. So part of our effort is to raise public awareness that, you know, when you're watching something on Discovery or History Channel, Nat Geo, think about what you're paying for. Think about the conditions that that these networks are imposing on the people who make this great TV.
And, you know, it shades over into beyond simple issues of fairness into issues of safety. I mean, you have a production assistant who is asked to basically on 1 hour of sleep sometimes, or three, you know, to drive a group of people in terrible conditions on a road. It can be very dangerous.
Are there any breaks? Do you ever get overtime pay if you're working all those hours?
No.
So I'm assuming unpaid work is expected of somebody who's in this business.
That's exactly right. There's a culture that has been set by the companies, which I think it takes the understandable desire of, especially of young people, to be in a creative field, to be in television, which is glamorous, and then it turns that into a tool to squeeze them beyond the limits of their endurance.
From your experience, what happens if you complain about not getting paid for all those extra hours?
The responses can vary from a smile and a nod to a "you're fired." I mean, but very rarely does anything happen.
Most people see this as part of the job?
The companies have successfully created a culture where this is part of the job, and where they tell you that you're replaceable. And when you do what is ultimately the solution to this, which is to attempt to bring people together to work with the union to collectively bargain, then the gloves can really come off.
If you get fired, is there anything you can do about it?
Well, yeah, we have successfully brought some cases where people have been have settled their cases where they've been improperly fired. I mean, I think in the long run, what's going to take, though, is a more unionized industry, frankly. I mean, right now, people accept the idea that if they lose one job, they have to scrap for another one. It's just not sustainable in the long run. With the hours and the conditions, the lack of benefits, it's not sustainable. So I think in the long run, in addition to bringing individual cases about losing a job or not getting the next one, we're going to have a very different culture.
Well, I would guess that you also have a reputation. If you have been seen as a troublemaker on one show, you're less likely to get hired on the next show.
Yes, which is
why. And this is a small industry, isn't it?
Yeah, people know each other, and what goes around comes around, and which is why right now, even though I'm speaking very frankly, my heart is in my throat, because I don't know what the consequences of speaking out on this
issue will be. I was going to ask you about that, whether you were worried.
I am worried.
Yeah.
I'm doing it anyway, but I'm worried.
We do see it, and our message to the men and women who do this work is stick with it, because ultimately you're stronger if you do stick with it. If you're picked off one by one and worry about your economic future, your conditions are just going to worsen.
Let's bring in a caller. Anna, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me. I am a reality TV editor. I've been doing that job for about 7 years now, and I am part of an organization called the New York Editors Collective, and it's a group of over 1,000 editors, mainly working in reality TV, because that is the big industry here in New York, and I co-chair their education and advocacy department. And what we're working on is that, similar to reality TV editors are dealing with a lot of similar labor abuses as the producers are, but because our industry is largely non-union, many editors working in reality TV have little or no experience with working a union job, so they tend to take these labor abuses for granted.
Are you also working incredible hours?
I personally am very lucky to be on a wonderful job right now that has very sane hours, but I have experienced working on jobs where working till midnight and beyond was de rigueur and thoroughly expected, and if you said no, you could definitely expect to be fired. And I have many friends and colleagues who've worked on jobs where for example, a 60-hour week was required, and if you didn't work all of those 60 hours during the five-day week, you could be asked to come in on the weekend and work for no extra pay.
Anna, thank you so much for calling us. You want to jump in on that?
Well, stick with it. We definitely support organizing efforts across the industry.
And one of the terrible things that one of my colleagues testified when we had this hearing in front of the city council last week was that clearly the employers know that what they're doing is wrong, because in one of the jobs that she was in, while being expected to work a 60-hour week, she was asked to fill out a time card that said that she worked from 10 to 6 every day.
Let's take another call. Maddie from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me.
Go ahead.
One of the other points that I just wanted to bring up is that with the explosion of nonfiction television, we've heard that schedules are shorter, budgets are being cut, even though we know that the profits are increasing. But that has forced producers to wear many hats. So back in the day when I was a documentary filmmaker producer, I was just a producer. We also had a writer. We had a director. And so, in this current paradigm, we're expected to be the producer, the writer, and the director for, frankly, less money than we made as producers years ago.
And if I might add, there's also a arms race in terms of the quality of these shows and the sort of elaborate production values. A lot of these nonfiction shows use dramatic recreations with actors and jibs and booms and whatever. So you're expected to do all of that with fewer people and produce more.
We'll take a little break and come back with more on this. My guests are David Van Taylor, who is a reality television director, writer, and producer, and Lowell Peterson, the executive director of the Writers Guild of America East. We are also inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. Stay with us for more. And we are back with our look at the reality of reality TV, based actually on a report called The Real Reality. My guests are Lowell Peterson, the executive director of the Writers Guild of America East, and reality television director, writer, and producer David Van Taylor. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. Another caller said that her sister worked in reality TV show. Her house was damaged during Sandy, and she had to take 2 days off. The show cut her pay.
Yeah. Pretty flatly illegal. If you get your pay cut and you don't get overtime, that's illegal, but it's certainly not surprising.
Now, we mentioned earlier that there's a lot that is not real about reality TV. It's scripted. What about some of the other common misconceptions about the genre? Who constructs the story arc?
Well, that's really the job of the producers, who are really writers. When we say scripted, it's certainly not usually the case that a writer is telling somebody what to say. But what is the case is that we come in at whatever point and figure out what the drama here is, and then marshal all of the efforts toward creating a dramatic product with narrative impact.
Well, the quiz shows used to be fixed. Are shows like Survivor or The Great Race fixed as well?
I've never worked for those shows.
Yeah,
so
but
I
you know people, no?
Well, some of the outcomes are certainly rather predictable.
And that's because they want certain people to win.
Absolutely.
Actually, my father was on a quiz show, and they offered to give him answers because he was a handsome young soldier at the time. So it's an old practice.
Pam, hi, you're on the air. Pam from Fort Washington.
Hi, how are you, Leonard?
I'm okay. Do you work in reality TV?
No, I used to work in television and film production for about 5 years. And I never worked in reality TV. But what I thought was really interesting was that we were always very concerned with the turnaround. Turnaround is a big deal. The unions, whether it be the actors or the crew, need to have a 10 or 12-hour turnaround from when they leave work to when they come back. But production people, there's no turnaround issues whatsoever. So we are the last ones to leave. We're the first ones to come in. And we could have a 6-hour turnaround, whatever it is, and it's not even an issue. And we never get overtime, of course.
Yeah, and this kind of burnout is what makes it impossible for people to sustain their careers. You can't work that many hours in a row and expect to be able to keep doing it for years and years, which in the long run hurts the shows. I mean, if you can't do it for years and years and have some control over your creative life, the product is going to suffer. The shows are going to suffer.
And yeah, I want to say that, you know, in response to the city council hearings, a group of these companies issued a statement which was essentially a series of not very thinly veiled threats to leave New York aimed at the administration. But the fact is that these shows are really relying on the creativity, the education, the sophistication of the labor force in New York. And they're taken, they want to make good products, and good products succeed in the marketplace, and they're exploiting the workers for that.
Do production companies care about staff retention?
They should, and they do. What they don't understand is how to actually make it happen. There has to be some sort of collective voice on the other side of the table. Otherwise, it will just continue to churn.
Well, these sorts of things are what led to people unionizing in the past. Are things different because they can threaten now to leave New York and go to a right-to-work state?
Well, it's interesting. We have a lot of meetings of nonfiction writer-producers with our traditional members, our comedy variety people, our scripted dramatic people. And the issues and the threats that get made, even in the scripted realm, are very similar. They shouldn't be taken as seriously as they are. Reality TV is not leaving New York. People are not going to have their careers completely upended just because they hold out for health benefits. It is the kind of threat that's been made typically for generations. And the fact is, it's very difficult for these companies actually to make good on these threats. They bluster a lot more than they actually bite.
And it's interesting, you know, having been involved in this union organizing campaign for a little while now, you can see the same arguments being trotted out by different companies, and you know, often in the same verbiage, and while at the same time they're saying, look, we're just a family here and we have an individual relationship with you, and yet they're spouting talking points that come from union busting lawyers, essentially.
Bob from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'd just like to point out that while you're discussing the hardships the producers go through, the technicians, the grips and the gaffers, are work the same hours and under conditions that actually put their lives at risk, you know, dealing with electricity, ladders, putting up lights in a lightning storm, ridiculous things that, you know, actually put their lives at risk.
Absolutely. And you know, sometimes I shudder to see the things that I, as a producer, am expected to impose onto the crew. I will say that I am grateful for the fact that most directors of photography that I've worked with in this industry have a deal where they are working a set number of hours and then getting overtime, whether it's 10 hours or 12 hours is sometimes the case. But that at least sets some limits for everybody because the companies don't want to go into overtime and pay that overtime.
Well, if the cinematographers are members of a union,
sometimes. Not always.
So the unionized cinematographers don't get hired for these shows?
Often they don't, or they're working off the books.
Yeah. You know, and safety is a real problem, as the caller suggests. It's very, very treacherous on some of these shoots.
John from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Go ahead.
So I wanted to touch on I started out as a production assistant in reality TV. I worked in reality TV for a couple of years, starting as a production assistant and moving up into the grip and electric department, so we're also known as lighting. And I'm now a union electrician here in New York. And touching on safety aspects and long hours, in the union world, we're often working the same hours. I've worked 20, 21-hour days on a union show. The difference is, with these long hours and treacherous conditions, we are compensated for overtime, usually correctly. Sometimes you have to battle with production accountants, but that's normally not a problem. And with the longer hours, if we're getting off work at 3, 4 in the morning, we're often offered safe rides home because, you know, in New York, not everyone drives, especially the city. So we'll get, so production will pick up a cab for us. And they generally have accounts, so you're not paying any money out of pocket. Or if you're on a far the location, you're in New Jersey or Connecticut or out on Long Island, there's hotel rooms available. So the safety considerations are far more prevalent in the union world. In fact, when I was working as a production assistant, I would often, my day will be 4 or 5 hours longer than the directors, the producers. I might have to drive a director home. and then go back and hop in a box truck and drive it to New Jersey to drop off rental gear in someone's storage unit in the middle of the night. And then you're on your own to get home. There's just both consideration for the well-being and safety of the production crew, very much so the production assistant who often...
John, thank you for calling us.
Where are all the people calling to say what a great experience they've had working in nonfiction television?
Well, you know, it's interesting. As you said at the outset, this is a tale of two television industries. On the unionized side, there are protections. You do have a voice on the job. You have benefits. On the non-union reality side, that's where it's not sustainable. And we're hoping to change that. But it is two very different experiences of making a living.
Who are the major players in the reality television industry here in New York? Aren't many of them now coming from other countries because New York has been courting TV and film production?
Yeah, one of the biggest in the country, in fact, they claim to be the biggest, is ITV, which is the
British.
It's British. They just bought Left Field Entertainment. They've been on a year-long buying spree. They have spent hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. The Endemol is another big company. So yeah, probably the majority of New York production companies are owned by European multinationals.
Didn't the British kind of invent reality television?
Yeah,
They're coming here as well. They can bring some of the things they create in England to the United States and not have to pay for any creators' fees.
Yeah, it is definitely true that Britain has always been a leader in nonfiction, going back to the documentary days. So I think that's certainly part of it. But I also want to say I don't think they're coming to New York because the city is doing anything to lure them. They're coming to New York because this is where the action is in nonfiction in America, and they're finding dynamic companies here that they see have profit potential, and they're snapping them up to be part of their big business plan.
But New York is giving tax breaks to film and television companies.
It is in the scripted realm. In fact, those tax breaks have been enormously successful in attracting TV series and feature films. The nonfiction reality TV producers want those tax breaks. I think it's pretty clear politically they won't get them as long as working conditions are this bad.
Joseph from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Joseph, and I've been a producer in New York for about 15 years in nonfiction. And I'd like to address the issue of falsification of time cards and payroll fraud. I've worked oftentimes in excess of 60, 70 hours a week, sometimes more than that, nights, weekends, holidays. And yet each week have been directed to fill out a time card indicating I'm in on Monday at 10, I'm out at 7, I have an hour lunch break, Monday through Friday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, no matter the hours.
They call it nonfiction, but.
Well, that's where the fiction part comes in.
Yeah.
comes in terms of non-compensation for hours worked, as well as, you know, being participatory in a huge payroll scam. I mean, these companies are ripping off not just.
Do you have a pushback? Joseph, I have very little time. Do you have a pushback?
No.
Because you want to work.
Well, of course I want to work. I'm actually right now, I'm not giving my last name because I'd like to continue working, and I've already suffered retribution for participating in the campaign to organize. There's no pushback without collective bargaining at all.
Now, is this sort of thing, Lowell, is it legal to have people forge their time cards?
No, we call it wage theft for a reason. It also gives lie to the idea that somehow the companies are unaware of the practice. They direct people to lie on their time cards.
So what are the recommendations from the code of conduct?
Well, what the city council has called for, and Danique Miller was the chair of the committee that held the hearing, is a code of conduct that would set reasonable budgets, reasonable production schedules, benefits, basic benefits like health benefits, and a respect for collective bargaining. And we think that that we can get some traction on that. It's politically important to the city council. It's economically important to the local economy. And, man, the writer-producers and other people need it.
But even within unionized shops, a caller called in who works for the History Channel, who says that the same culture exists because they just rely on freelancers a lot and they don't have to pay the health benefits or overtime or any of the other things that you have to pay somebody who's in a union.
Well, you know, when our union is made up of freelancers.
You have 30 seconds.
And we do. We have figured out how to get health benefits for freelance employees. As long as they're employed, we can get the benefits.
And the response has been overwhelming. Everywhere we've had the opportunity to have an election, we have won it.
A caller said she loved working in TV production, but she just had a baby, can't go back to work in the industry because the hours are crazy and there's no flexibility. My great thanks to our two guests today. David Van Taylor, who is a reality television director, writer, and producer. And Lowell Peterson, the executive director of the Writers Guild of America East. When you're watching a reality television show, keep in mind what you've just heard.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you both so much for being on our show today.
Thank you.